There's been like a distant alarm ringing in the background for a while, quiet enough for it's not been picked up on mic. And now there are flashing blue lights outside of my window.
Yeah, I can see those flashing lights in the background. There's like a mirror or something.
Yeah, so that's fun. Yeah.
What's the alarm? Is that a fire alarm?
Possibly. not close enough to be in my building. There are multiple buildings in this complex.
It's a different building.
Yeah, so it's fine. It's not affecting me. So clearly there is no problem.
Ignore the fire alarm.
I think it's fine. But just if it turns out that I might have to take action, I will step away. But just anyway.
She finds debts by giving out powers and calls them in order to make deals with lumens so that when a William and a Margaret arrive at her door, she will be able to dispatch them. But of course, that was not enough for your queen. After nigh countless cycles of doing that, she happened upon you. You were the perfect thing for her plan. A strange retelling of the story, compelling in its own way. And so when you were about to drown, she pulled you from the river, and you did what she had committed you to do, what you had committed yourself to do. And that is live. As long as you live, the cycle will not repeat. If you don't die, there will be no changeling to replace you. If you and Margaret don't fall together, then there will be no new William and no new Margaret to threaten her dominion. And of course, I struck back because I was jilted in my own deals. So when the Forest Queen finally desperately reached out to the Mariner himself in order to commit her foul deeds, I tore your love from his arms, but I held on to her, and I molded her a new body, and I returned her to the world of the living, and you two found one another once again. And now, William, with this story, you are free to do whatever you like.
Then I suppose the only question left is, will you help me kill the Forest Queen?
I believe if you truly wish to destroy the Forest Queen, that will be up to you and my daughter. And unlike her, I don't wish to meddle in those affairs.
Gable is like gripping Oromar's arm just because they know that Oromar can't feel it, like just sort of really, really hard. Mm-hmm.
There is like a sense of response that something is hot, and he like gradually looks towards you and is all like, okay, it's not an attack, we're fine. Gradually looks back towards the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Very well. Then I suppose I'll need to find Margaret.
You must do something first, and that is release this poor creature, as you have sworn to me that you will do.
Oh, I thought killing the queen would be kind of a two-for-one. But I could just take him with me now, too.
William, Travis, the thing that you will need in the coming days is to realize your potential. One of the things that I don't blame you for One of the reasons that I have not drowned you in frustration watching you these 200 years is that you have lived according to your nature. Sphere has placed in front of you fate. And what have you done? You have yearned. You have given to impulse, and you have followed your will. If fate is placed before you, you will walk in the other direction. If a story is presented to you, you will transform it. You are the changeling. You should consider embracing that, at least in part. And your first act is to realize your own light. Yes, the Forest Queen can make a changeling, but she cannot break one. As soon as a changeling is made, it is in your domain, and the only power that she holds over them are the deals she strikes.
Then I would like to try some magic.
All right, Johnny, how you want to do this?
Well, I don't know, you know. It's also, it's also new.
Because we could do this as a roll. I could also draw from the deck of luminaries, you know.
Okay, what if, can I try, here's what I want to try, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I want to try and take this little creep and basically, like, transfer his changelingness into me.
Ooh!
Yeah.
So I don't know if,
okay,
you know, we both got to cut. I got to cut my hand. He's got to cut his little creep paw. And we do a little handshake and do have some, you know, magic wrap around our hands. And then slowly he turns into a man.
So, Johnny, I think what I am kind of hearing is you describing a ritual. And, you know, we've talked about the idea of ritual and sacrifice and things before. Really, anytime you do magic in Sphere, you are calling on the foundational sources of power for magic.
Now, if I'm the changeling...
Mm-hmm. Mr. Changeling, yeah.
Esquire.
The ritual is whatever I say it is.
That is true. That is true. So when I say the sources of power, what I mean are all spells, really, regardless of the fact that, you know, that they are coming from a seer, an angel, a luminary, or some farmer somewhere. All spells are drawing on the same core elements, which are story. Is it a compelling tale? Is it something that makes sense in a way that people could believe, that would please a sense beyond sense? Tradition, is it something that has been repeated and reinforced? A story that has been told time and time again, not just from person to person, but across a culture. Place, is it taking place in somewhere that is significant, that symbolizes something important? Land, wave, and sky, does it use the elements of Sphere? Is it pulling on the sky? Is it pulling on the sea? Is it taking from the bones of the earth? Soul, does it have something to do with your immortal existence, the being that you have beyond being, at the core of yourself? Love and labor, is it something that you have committed your heart to? Is it something that represents the effort that you have put into it? Is it something that represents what it means to you personally? Bone, blood, and breath, is it something that you have committed your physical body to? Something that you have lent a personal part of yourself? Sacrifice, is it something that cost you? Something that will take away something valuable to give you something valuable in return? These are the core pillars of magic. So while you weave this ritual, the more of these pillars that you touch on, the stronger your spell is going to be. And you're right. You are the changeling. You are a luminary, which means that you have a significant amount of story going into it. Any ritual that you decide will have some power, but if it is prepared carefully, it will have more power. And I'm telling you, as your game master, doing this like big ritual, the more elements that you can justify as part of what you're doing, the better your role is going to be. We're going to start you out at one green die and
go for it.
Then
that's enough.
Upgrade it.
Do it.
For each detail that feels like you're hitting. Nathan, you had raised
yes.
a finger.
So, and I like this if this is a detail that is unbeknownst to Travis, because when Orimar casts spells, it draws on the power of the heart that Travis is holding, and Travis takes the strain damage. I like the fact that if Travis is going to this really laissez-faire and is like, I don't need to sacrifice anything from this, but it's still holding on to the heart that this actually causes, in effect, strain damage on Orimar inadvertently, and neither of us are necessarily aware that that will be a factor in this Full Metal Alchemist equivalent exchange.
No!
I like this. I like the idea. I think you've just invented another mechanic for us, Nathan, in that this is a big spell, right? This is a huge sort of mythical spell because it is something that a luminary is doing. That means that like the normal strain cost of 2 strain for a normal spell just is not going to be sufficient. So I think, Johnny, each detail that you add of the ritual that reflects one of the core pillars of magic is simply going to cost 2 strain. So there's 2 strain for the spell itself and then 2 strain for each detail that you add that will add power to the spell. So yeah, you're going to need to share this between you and Orimar with Orimar's heart, because there's a very real chance that after this is done, you may still have to face the cutting stone. And I really do like the peril that that puts you in.
Don't worry. Gable's holding Orimar's hand, and so it's fine.
I got 13 strain. Fuck me up.
I think, obviously, we're each going to cut our hands. So that's the blood one. Mm-hmm. So I get 1 green for that.
So your green upgrades to a yellow.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
Rules.
This is going to be a slow build.
Oh, God. You told me like a million different magic things.
Does it fit the story? What are we doing to make it?
Yeah, so it double fits the story because I'm doing the thing Rusalka asked me. And technically I'm killing a changeling, which is what the Forest Queen wanted.
That's true. Mm. I will add another one for that.
So that's 1 green
and 1 yellow. Yes.
So that's 1 green and 1 yellow.
Okay.
We're 3 upgrades there, which is 6 strain.
I think it would be funny, though. I don't know whether or not it would help, but it's a good bit if I do pull out my Illimat deck, and I know that this will happen. Is every single card I draw is a changeling? I think that's incredible. Just a funny bit.
That's a good bit.
Yeah. Love that. Love that.
So I'll take like 3 yellow for that. And
so that will upgrade. You are now at 2 yellow.
Oh, hell yeah.
That's plenty.
How what's the difficulty on this bad boy?
I think this is at least hard.
Which is 3
That's
purple.
3 yeah. purple?
Mm-hmm.
This you're telling me that this isn't daunting, James?
Liz.
You're right, Liz. This is daunting.
It's daunting.
So now you have to deal with that.
Is daunting
Liz,
4?
Liz sort of talked it
I'm
up.
Just yeah. saying. I'm just
and
saying.
And that's in the rules of the game. Anybody can look up the game that we're playing, which is distinctly not the core game, which is at any time Liz can just say, shouldn't this be harder? And it does become
shouldn't
harder.
I just feel like I have to roll a lot of hard ones. So.
Oh, God. What were all the... Can you just like go down the list?
Let's walk you through.
Is this a document that you can share?
It is a document, but there's a lot to it. It's a little complicated.
Blood,
it's not just
we've
a
got
bullet
story
point.
And we've got audience.
So
using any elemental effects?
You've already hit story. There's tradition, which I don't know that really tradition is going to work here. The next is place, a question of where you're doing it.
So he is sort of stuck between the swamp and the woods, or the water and the woods, in a swamp. What if I, because I am there, or what if we move him out of the place where he's like supposed to be guarding? I don't know which would be better for...
I think actually, like, you have touched on something in that this is where the river meets the sea meets the swamp. It is a place where, like, fundamentally these elements are flowing together and changing. So I think the place actually is a very significant place right where you are right now.
Great.
So...
love to hear it.
That's 2 yellow, 1 green. Next, after places, land, wave, and sky. Mm. How would you be incorporating sphere itself into this? And that can be like as simple as arranging rocks or whatever, you know?
Interesting. What if we do like at the start of the ritual, there's like, okay, I want to do it like in the swamp. I think at the start there would be the little lizard fella, deer man, would be sort of in the swampiness, then sort of surrounded by, you know, some kind of wreath or arrangement of leaves and plant life, forest stuff. And then during the ritual, I want to separate the forest stuff and the water stuff from where he's standing so that he's just like on dry land.
I like that. I like that a lot. So that is 3 yellow dice that you have right now.
And
12 strength. Yeah.
But it's okay. I'm holding Orimar's hand. Mm-hmm.
Is that feels like enough, right?
Yeah. It's 3 yellow versus 4 purple.
Mm-hmm. Feels pretty good.
Feels pretty good.
I would advise you, probably advise you that you might want one more element.
Okay.
We have soul. That would be committing a part of your immortal form to it, which I don't know that that's necessarily appropriate.
Well, that feels like the reverse is what I want to do, really. I want to take part of his soul to turn him into a man.
Yeah, yeah.
So I guess I'll lose 1 yellow, turn it into a green for that one.
Huh. There's love and labor, which is, you know, first of all, I don't know how much emotion there is between you and Raoul. Like, he is a friend of yours, or was at one point, but there's also labor. How much personal effort and care are you putting into this? And is there a way that you could put personal effort and care into this? There's bone, blood, and breath. You're already committing blood to this in some way. And then after that, there is sacrifices, which, you know, can be bodily sacrifices, but they can also be metaphysical. You know, Jonnet sacrificed the knowledge and memory of Hip to face the Mariner. So, like, there are things that you can do, and I'm kind of open to hearing them.
None of the remaining things really feel like what I'm going for, if that makes sense. And I think that we were like close, but kind of not really, because we,
yeah,
you know, like we both kind of kept secrets from each other. So we were close in a very superficial way. I think we could wind up being closer after this. I think this is the kind of thing that brings people together, you know.
You know,
you rip the curse from their soul, and you know, then they're a little bit more than a drinking buddy.
Yeah. So I know you advised me to get one more, but to that I say, poo-poo.
Delicious.
One last thing. May I suggest there is like a blue dye for the fact that Orimar is essentially doing a pain split with you on this?
Mm.
And Gable has Liz has pointed out multiple times that Gable is holding
Orimar's hand.
I don't know if the pain split is three ways or not, but at least the emotional support.
Orimar falls.
It's like electricity.
It's more like, oh, if Orimar faints, I got you. Mm. You won't bonk your head.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It won't hurt that bad.
Oh, okay. So Gable is not intending to join the pain split. Okay.
No, I don't think Gable knows what's going on.
this is a very unbeknownst, like an element that neither of us are going to be aware is going to happen. We just know.
As far as I'm concerned, Gable is like, just saw, like, the Forest Queen told a very long story, and now Travis is doing a craft.
Light us a feather.
And in Gable's head, yeah. It's just baby bottle pop, baby bottle pop, baby bottle pop. Yeah, with increased urgency and terror.
It ain't baby bottle pop. It ain't breakfast.
It ain't.
Okay, yeah, so this is a two-way pain split, so I will ask Johnny and Nathan to both take 7 strain.
Do I get a blue for that or no?
Yeah, we'll give you a blue for that pain split. You are not alone in doing this.
Okay, permission to both grip and rip.
Johnny, grip it, rip it, baby.
Ooh,
that was an emotion. Uh-huh. Unreadable.
Oh, yeah.
Unreadable.
Oh, yeah.
That is one advantage.
That means we do have to draw a luminary to see how this goes.
Full wash. Oof.
I'm realizing now I did leave my deck of luminaries upstairs, so I'm going to run upstairs really, really quick.
That's cool. Gives us a moment to steal our nerves. Just fuck me.
One advantage. Mm-hmm. That's so, like... Especially with those big dice pools of just being a...
I know, it's insane.
It was bracing for, like, 2 failures and a triumph. But no, just an advantage. But then with how classically these kind of, like, draws have been in the in this moment, I'm safely putting my money on the card draw being either the Changeling or the Forest Queen.
Man, Changeling would be... very good.
Upsetting. I would quit the show. It's like I can't be involved in this anymore. Pull a card, boy.
I'm shuffling first. I gotta shuffle.
I'm shuffling.
Every day he's shuffling.
All right, Johnny, I'm fanning them out. Is there somewhere you want it pulled from?
Get the one that's the Changeling. So wherever that one is.
Wherever that is. Okay.
I'm gonna say left third. Something in the left third.
Okay. I think I'm getting a little tingle from here. Mm.
Yes!
What is it, James? What is it, James?
Yes!
Absolutely not.
I win so James. Much money. I need to go to Vegas literally right now.
No.
I swear.
I'm quitting the show.
I ain't done nothing.
I'm leaving. This haunted show.
This is my
I cannot
fault.
Do this.
This is my full deck. When I got upstairs, I was like, where's my Illimat thing? And we've got several copies of Illimat because, you know, this is a home that's always prepared for the worst situation. And I was like, where's mine? And I was looking around. I was about to grab one of the other ones and Mel pointed me in the direction of mine that has, you know, all of the playtest cards that are unreleased and also has all of the Crane Wife cards and whatnot. I pulled the Changeling. I did what Johnny told me. Absolutely. I stayed to the left third.
You were feeling the tingling. You said.
There's no way.
You said.
People aren't going to believe you. No one's going to believe you.
Mad that I, first of all, I'm not recording this thing on Zoom, which I should be anyway. But also, I wouldn't have had the camera on it. But yeah.
Yeah, we need an overhead camera for this too.
A little bit late.
Cool. I get to be in a dressing gown for the for prosperity. Excellent.
Is a dressing, not to change the subject, but is a dressing gown, is that a robe? Is that what we would call a robe?
I guess so.
Or is that
yes.
something different?
I think so. Okay.
Oh, Johnny, you fucking pervert! You just want to know if it's some Harry Potter bullshit. No.
What?
Would we say that's a dressing robe?
No.
Fuck off.
I wouldn't, there's nothing in my life that I would describe as a dressing gown. You know what I mean? Sure, I have no...
You don't have a robe?
I have a robe, yes.
I take objection to like a specific British phrase being Harry Potter shit. I specifically object to that for many reasons.
I think that shows up how remarkably uncreative that like we thought, oh, this is a magical world. It's just Britain.
Unfortunately,
honestly.
Just Britain.
This is so whimsical. No, it's just Britain. That's just the
it's
UK.
Just Edinburgh. Edinburgh's great. Please hear that. yes.
In my head, a dressing gown would be like what You know, like what Ebenezer Scrooge wears when he's visited by all the ghosts.
I guess that is what I did watch the Muppets, like a Christmas Carol, actually, literally 2 days ago. And yeah, I guess it's more of a smoking jacket or whatever the fuck.
Well, yeah, probably the difference is like dressing gown goes down to the floor and a robe is supposed to like hit you at the thigh. Mm. That's just my conjecture.
Yeah, this is a knee-length joint that we're rocking right now. Mm. But yes, while you were away from the mic, I was kind of like betting it's either Forest Queen or Changeling. Just so I need to apparently take out a lottery ticket right now. But
haunted program.
I think the thing that freaks me out the most is at this point, I'm just so jaded by this show and how it works that like of the...
Don't say that on record.
Fucking cards that I have. I have 30 cards that like, oh yeah, I just pulled the Changeling because the show is magic, so that was bound to fucking happen.
Laissez-faire.
I hope you're happy, Johnny. Sorcery took place.
So I would assume what happens is it, because, you know, this is the first time I'm trying my
I'm sorry, talent. This already happened once, this arc. We already did something exactly like this. This arc.
Did we?
Yeah. What did we do? We did, and you don't even remember because it doesn't feel significant because it happens all the time.
I'm sorry we're yelling so much, Casey. I apologize.
Thank you for the apology. It's deserved.
I'm over it. I'm over it. Johnny, please continue. Please continue.
I'm over Johnny too, you know?
Same.
God.
I think that since this is the first time that I've used my little magic, tried my little magic, it seems like it's not gonna work. And that's why we had to pull the luminary. So I think that like maybe at first, instead of me taking the changeling from him, it starts to like go the other way. And I'm like, oh, no. And have to like really kind of steel myself and pull it back.
Let's pull up the changeling's description here.
Fair enough.
The changeling is transformation, yearning, impulse, and will. The divination is something is in flux. The new is more important than the old. The changeling is far more concerned with what might be won than what could be lost. They are willing to stand against any force that might attempt to stymie their growth. A person in the thrall of the changeling is transforming, and they intend to see it through. So yeah, you're in this position, I think, that is uncomfortable for Travis, in that like you're kind of having to accept a mythic role, as it were. Like Travis has made it very clear through, you know, rash decision making and kind of maudlin, morose lamentations at Gable, that he doesn't like being the force or you know, at will to forces that are larger than himself. It freaks him out. Even when there are things that potentially could make him happy involved, he kind of just doesn't like not having what he sees as total agency over a situation. So you're doing this very old magic, and I do think it goes wrong at first because it feels so counter to what you want out of life. But because we have the changeling backing you here, I kind of think there is a way to put some Travis Madigo stank on it.
Mm-hmm.
A way to like change this process to be something that you would prefer instead of what exists and would have come to pass otherwise. Because as the changeling, you can change what that means. As long as you are following your will and your impulses and your yearning, there's a lot that you can do with it. So I'll tell you, the vision that I had for this, if this spell was simply successful, it would have torn away the animal forms from the soul of your friend. You would have absorbed the axolotl and the key deer into yourself, and those would have been new fun things that Travis could have transformed into. But also, in addition to that, because there is no human body, because in a deal with the Forest Queen, he is completely given up. Raoul has given up his human form to the point where it just doesn't exist anymore. All that would remain was his human soul that still lived somewhere in this tangle between these two forms and animal spirits. And that soul would have simply been committed to Rusalka's arms in the river. But Johnny, you can change that. How would you like to, if you would like to at all? And if you decide that you would not like to change it at all, I would want to know why Travis decides that he is just going to go along with the way that things are, because that would represent character growth as well.
Could I, in this process, can I transform into whatever, some animal, doesn't matter, and until my next transformation basically give him my human body?
Damn. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because if he's not going to be immortal, if Rusalka maybe is going to take him anyway, kind of give him my body to get his affairs in order, and then I'll take it back.
Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the moment you have all been waiting for. The newest generic mid-roll is out. That's right, this one is updated, and it's more generic than ever.
Just so everybody knows, I'm doing generic mid-rolls because I recently had a baby.
Heroes, our captain, our very own Nathan Blades, has designed a brand new role-playing game called The Ballad of Conjurers. It was inspired by JRPGs and the melodrama that they are famous for. And you can pick it up right now on Itch for just $5. You can find it by looking Nathan Blades up on Itch or by following the link in our show notes. Heroes, I've also got something new coming out. I wrote a direct follow-up to my very first book, The Ultimate RPG Character Backstory Guide, called The Ultimate RPG Character Backstory Guide Expanded Genres Edition. Basically, we took the concept of prompts and exercises to help you develop backstories for characters at your role-playing table, or really any original characters you want to work on, that use game mechanics to make the process easy and fun, and we expanded it way past the fantasy adventure genre, while also including exercises for fantasy adventure. If you're the type of person who loves thinking about your characters or characters in any property that you love, I highly recommend picking up this book. It's coming out in June, but you can pre-order it right now. And pre-ordering is super important. Not only does it tell the bookstores that people are interested in this book, but it tells my publisher that people are interested in this book, and it helps me publish more books and therefore support myself and my family. You can pre-order a copy now by heading to bit.ly/RPGBackstory2, and that's 2 as in the numeral 2, or by going anywhere books are sold and signing up for a pre-order. That is all major online retailers, every major brick-and-mortar bookstore, and of course your favorite indie brick-and-mortar bookstores. And I always recommend you go to an indie bookstore or a friendly local game store to order a copy because it helps out so many people. So put yourself down for a pre-order for the Ultimate RPG Character Backstory Guide Expanded Genres Edition today. With that said, I want to thank Lex the Lexicon Artist for joining us as a guest for this arc. In addition to our regular game, for this arc, we're playing StarCrossed, the two-player Forbidden Romance RPG. StarCrossed was designed by my dear friend and former network member, Alex Roberts, and is published by Bully Pulpit Games. You can pick up your own copy of StarCrossed by following the link in our show notes. A big thank you to all the cast and crew who are involved in producing the music for this arc. That is not just our guest for the arc, Lex the Lexicon Artist, but it's also Arnie Parrott, our house musician, Tyler Davis, who you're going to be hearing later on, James Mendez Hodes, who wrote some lyrics for one of the songs that'll be appearing much later on in the arc, and of course Casey Tony, our editor, for choosing when and where it appears in the show. And also a huge thank you to Tracy Barnett, who assisted Casey Tony on the editing for this arc. As always, one of the biggest thank yous goes to our Patreon patrons, who made everything you're listening to possible by supporting the show. Let's thank them right now. Thanks to everyone who supports us already, and everyone who's gonna support us in the future. Now, with all of that out of the way, let's get back in the sky! ¶¶
And Jonnet, the next card is the Star Watcher. The Star Watcher's themes are guidance, wisdom, and clarity. You will find information that clarifies your path forward. It will help you see hidden danger and provide you a path around it. Like a guiding star in the night sky, the Star Watcher is a fixed reminder that there is a way forward.
So I feel like this is an opportunity to maybe just have a moment, like on the ship, that maybe is Jonnet's like clarifying, like, I'm supposed to be here. I can make a path for myself. It's either that, or I feel like this is the first instance of touching the feather and getting like a like hit with all of that.
I think this might be the first moment of touching the feather. Yeah. It really does feel like that to me.
And so I think that there's, I don't know, it feels like there is a very trippy line that we have to walk, because Jonnet has to remember this while also not remembering who gave him the feather.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. So I think that this warm feeling that kind of washes over our duo right now, like we get hit with this wave, the memory of Wei's experience kind of like washes over, but it also ends. And in the second wave, it's another sense of warmness. And like, we just see some scene painting of the interior of Jonnet's house. It's a mixture of like wooden brick. It's not anything fancy, but it's bright. It's a cool summer day. Zana is kind of running around the house like gleefully. This is kind of, I don't want to say past the point of drought, but like this is past the point of the community has kind of come together to make the best of the situation that it's in. And so there are smiles that can be seen. And so now we see footsteps like running to the door and the door being like flung open, and we hear, it's delivery day. It's delivery day. And so we kind of intuit that that is Zana at the front door, and she's kind of like, I would do this like as a kid on Christmas, where I would just like I had a jingle bell that I would ring throughout the house to get people awake so we can like open up stuff. The door flies open, and then we hear this like steps out onto like this sort of front porch area, and we see loose debris and like dust that collects on like a railing get brushed over with what looks like the tiny little hands of a little kid. She kind of like leans over and like very excitedly looks out into the distance. And then we see young Jonnet like kind of like walk up to the hands that we don't see, but like join in and like get excited. And then we hear like larger footsteps of Douglas kind of like, okay. I know it is delivery day. It is the same day every month. So you don't need to tell me that, kids. All right. And it's like, but I'm just excited. I want to know what I'm going to get. I was like, okay, well, if you don't calm down, all right, you're not going to get anything. And then there's like a hush that goes over both Zana and Jonnet. And then it's like, now you know I'm playing with you. Yeah! Delivery day! And so then we kind of get this moment where Jonnet and Zana and Douglas, everybody is kind of on the porch, kind of looking out. And we see them get very excited. And it's like, he's here! Yeah! And they're celebrating, they're kind of waving to their friend, and it's like, where you been? You're late! And then we see Jonnet's form like run out into the front yard and walk up and like greet nothing. And there is no, whereas with Zana and Douglas, we get a sense of their forms. We see like the dirt that they kick up when they move. We maybe feel their footsteps, and like they have weight in this world. Jonnet, this old Jonnet, is talking to nothing. There are no footsteps. At one point, Jonnet, being like trying to be the grown-up child that he is, still gives like a up, up, and like Jonnet is lifted into the air, but we don't see any, we don't get a sense of any hands like rippling clothes, or it's truly kind of ghost-like where Jonnet goes up, up, and then he is just very mechanically, almost as if like if you're animating in like After Effects, like the keyframes are just like up and round and down. There is no, it's very mechanical. And Jonnet, our current day Jonnet, looks at this and we see his brow furrow and he's like, wait, I know what day this is. This is the day that I get my eye. This is the day that I touch. And so I think a little bit more absentmindedly, he kind of makes his way down off the porch and to join in with the younger Jonnet. And he's kind of very inquisitively, kind of nervously watching his younger self talk up to the wind. And he watches his younger self ask, how were the travels? How many ships did you fly in this time? Like, how many gifts did you get me? How big is the gift that you get me? Why don't you just tell me what you got me? I'm so curious. And then we watch younger Jonnet reach up and wrap his hands around nothing and lead the air hurriedly back into the house. And we kind of leave our current day Jonnet truly trying desperately to grasp what he's not seeing. And in that, I think there might be opportunities for him to naturally want to look up at Teacher Wei. But I think any opportunity that may present itself, like, he is avoiding it. And he's trying to solve a very specific equation where, like, he does not have X.
Yeah, and as your brain like tries to wrap itself around it, it is almost like you are washing over it. Sweat again gathers on your brow. You can feel like that pinprick sensation over your body, like especially on your hands. It's just every time you feel like you're getting closer to it, there is something powerful that is washing you away, pulling you in every other possible direction.
And I think with that, he's like, today is the day that I get the feather. Today is the day that I find my eye. And I got the feather from...
Wei, you are watching Jonnet struggle right now. What do you do?
This is the day. This is the day that my life changed. And there's somebody that changes.
You don't remember this person. You don't remember how you got the feather.
I know. And I think there's a small element of a snap that Jonnet does not mean, but definitely like surfaces. Like, I know what today is. I know that I got the feather from... It happens in the summertime, every month in the summertime, it's delivery day. And I got toys, and I got the satchel bag, and I got the feather, and I got that from delivery day on, and that came from, and Jonnet kind of like very hurriedly walks into the house to like kind of regain the memory, and I feel like we catch back up in the memory where at this point, Douglas is patting nothing on the back. You can see Zana's spectral form kind of like leaning back as if it was pulling on clothing that we don't get a sense of. Then everybody kind of like, Douglas has his hand rested on kind of just like shoulder height. The two, Jonnet and Zana, step back in sort of like the equivalent of like a drum roll moment. And then, whereas I think we would get a sense of like hands moving into pockets or anything like that, we don't see that. It's just a light switch. At one point, there was no feather. At another point, there's a feather hovering in the air and a map hovering in the other equidistant in the air. And the map gets handed, floats its way very mechanically directly into Zana's hand. The feather floats its way mechanically into younger Jonnet's hand. And I think in that moment, I don't know, it feels like because we are in like a divinely attuned moment, we would kind of see energy happens. Like there is like an EMP. It like hugely ripples out. There is a moment of like airiness in the world, and then it all just sucks back in. And then I think the vestige of our younger Jonnet is the same, but there is a line on his forehead.
Yeah, I think it is not too dissimilar from what we saw with Teacher Wei, in that the lines of the universe are now connecting into Jonnet. Like, that they are drawn into his body and through his body, into his soul, through his soul, enmeshed. And the thing is, especially about seeing the world the way that Wei is able to see the world in the pocket space, is everything is connected to everything else. The lines of the universe of possibility are all connected in some way, but those connections are so much more solid now that the grounding, the anchor that Jonnet has in this eye that like slowly forms, it's like the tendrils of the universe like envelop around Jonnet's forehead and like pull open his forehead to the world around him. And it is striking, especially to Wei, because this connection is complete and flawless. It is something whole that is transferred into Jonnet that does not belong to him and is also entirely his. The feather is not consumed in the way that the feather is consumed when Gable touches angel feathers either. It is granted and transferred and also doesn't leave.
Yeah. So I think this whole time, I think Wei has wanted to show a level of, you know, concern and also comfort towards Jonnet, because they realize that there's this very important person that they're having trouble remembering. And then now I think that they're kind of taken aback and shocked and amazed at what they see with Jonnet's transformation. And they, you know, are further convinced that Jonnet has indeed had this experience that was, you know, not dissimilar to Wei's own experience, but, you know, with someone who, instead of like a lover, seems to be something of a mentor or someone who is very important in his life, but for some reason he's not able to remember that. And, you know, that's why Jonnet earlier had said, I don't know if I've ever had a similar experience. So I think now Wei's would be very curious to know what happened and why this person is no longer in Jonnet's memory. So this person seems to be to have been very important to you. Why can't you remember them?
I don't know.
Yeah, the pinpricks that you are feeling, like it becomes painful, somewhat reminiscent of the botched spell that you cast back on the civility, where to steal the sound from the nails that you drove into the cannons, it felt like they drove into your back. Now it feels like those pinpricks are a nail driving into your palm. It is excruciating. It feels cold, like static is filling your mind and brain. TV static, a loud hiss, the hiss of a powerful wave of water breaking apart and roaring, rolling forward, crashing over you, freezing you in your place. The harder you fight to drive towards these memories, the more painful their absence feels. It overwhelms you until the memory itself falls apart.
I think the falling apart aspect, I feel like, definitely provokes of just like a not yet. I don't want it to end yet. I don't think that stops anything, but I feel like there is a pain moment where it's like he is trying to force his eye to act and do something, and it's not.
Oh, yeah. You flare your eye open. Like, you, the threads that we saw, like, seeding themselves into Jonnet's soul in the creation of the eye, we can see him tugging them forward, trying to pull the universe around him apart in order to force these images out of his head, but they are simply not there. We can see the powerful connections of the universe forming the absence of a thing. I think so completely that way, you know, it is a negative image of a person. You might even be able to get an idea of this person's features, but that just cannot stick in Jonnet's mind. And as the memory falls apart, the more Jonnet tries to force it, the farther he gets and the more that it pains him, new memories rush to fill the void. And those come from Wei. And Wei, as much as you would like to hold it back and stop it, you get the impression that the harder Jonnet tries to remember this right now, the greater risk to himself he creates.
Mm. I feel like that has to come from Wei. So it feels like Jonnet like is kind of having this feeling of like desperation, and then also feels Wei's memories taking us to the next thing. And so he kind of turns to Wei. He's like, will you stop? Will you stop for just 1 second? I'm trying to think.
This is for your own good, Jonnet. Honestly, it's going to be really bad if you try to push yourself and force yourself to remember something that is clearly not part of you anymore. I know it hurts, but we have to do this.
I think he's probably dazed enough where, like, the new memory can happen, but, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think also there's a physical component to this where I'm kind of, like, gripping his shoulder, basically shaking him once and saying, like, we need to move on. We do need to move on from this.
And in a way, it feels like the universe shakes you and rocks you, too. We know in the outside world, Jonnet has unmatched command of the world around him. If he has desire and will, he can find the path towards what he needs when he needs it. That is the power that his eye grants him and helps him find. But this is not the world. This is a world of ways making, where Wei speaks the words that move the world. And so when Wei rocks Jonnet, the world rocks Jonnet. And it is enough to drift him away from the pain that he is so desperately chasing. But I don't think pain necessarily entirely leaves the atmosphere as we come to the final card that I drew for Wei, and that is the children, which again, and I cannot emphasize this enough, I did not set this up. These are raw draws. Scotty Jacks. Thank you. Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing.
In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more. You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com. Like System Mastery. System Mastery is a delightful stroll through the history of role-playing games. Except the games are terrible and the hosts are real jerks about everything. Join hosts Jeff and John as they explore the weirdest games ever made to talk about what worked, what went wrong, and which Silverhawk was the best. It was Hot Wing. You can find their shows at SystemMasteryPodcast.com or through a link on the OneShot website. Finally. Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. He also co-stars and consults on Showtime's Work in Progress. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Travis Madigo was played by Johnny O'Mara, who can be found on Twitter at JohnnyNBriefs or on his podcasts, Bill Buds and Dilettante Ball. Captain Oromar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at PhantomArtsENT. You can also find them streaming on twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my other podcast, OneShot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him on Twitter over at ArnePArrott. You can find more of his work at atptunes.com. This episode was edited by Casey Tony, who can be found on Twitter at Casey Pony or on his podcast, NeoScum. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at FionaPup. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists, and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show uses a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals who were fired by the private equity firm owning Fantasy Flight Games.
To the strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the skies.